Our Bible story from the Gospel of Luke this morning has a few interesting themes that wind their way through the narrative. A foreigner, a man of authority, who recognizes the authority of Jesus, appeals to the Jewish healer, Jesus, to cure his beloved slave. It seems that he suspects that as an outsider, he may not qualify for Jesus' mercy. But he displays an unusual depth of trust and humility when he acknowledges his own unworthiness and proclaims that just a word from Jesus will be sufficient. It's a fascinating little story. The idea of authority is very much on the surface of this story, as it has been from the beginning of the ministry of Jesus. The gospel writer Luke, following Mark, has gone to great pains to show that Jesus has authority from God as the anointed one. From the very beginning of the ministry in Nazareth and Capernaum, people are astonished at Jesus because, Luke says, he spoke with authority. People are amazed and astonished at his teaching. When the healer, Jesus, casts out a demon, again, the people are astounded and keep saying to one another, "What kind of utterance is this? For with authority and power, he commands the unclean spirits and out they come." Luke notes that a report about him began to reach every place in the region. After he forgives the sin of the paralytic, the Pharisees ask, "Who is this that speaks blasphemies? Who can forgive sins but God alone?" And Jesus replies, "So that you may know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins, I say to you, stand up, take your bed, and go to your home." Individuals leave all to follow this wandering healer. He doesn't observe the fasting rules, and he even claims authority over the Sabbath. This infuriates the scribes and Pharisees, and they begin to discuss with each other what they might do with Jesus. At this point in the story, Jesus goes into the mountain to pray, up into the mountain. And when he comes back, he chooses 12 disciples, another act of authority. And then, with authority, he reinterprets the essence of the law of Moses in the form of the Sermon on the Plain. The story has been all about authority. And it leads to this narrative that we have this morning, focused on the centurion with authority. Now, authority is an interesting thing. It's often defined as the right to do something. How would you define authority? The right to do something, or the right to exercise power, a moral or a legal right to control. In any society, it's important to get the lines of authority figured out correctly. You can get into a lot of trouble if you don't. Chickens in a barnyard know about the pecking order of authority. And whether it be animals or humans, figuring out how authority lines work is important to understand how the community functions. I have a story from Bolivia about a young police officer who got the authority lines wrong. When we lived in Bolivia, the police were very often poorly paid, but their position of power gave them a means to supplement their income. They called it gifting, kind of an enforced gifting. Actually, it was a freewheeling, negotiated, exciting bribing system. As a pale-faced foreigner, I often found myself stopped by a patrol officer for some unposted traffic violation, like making a left turn where you weren't supposed to, at least according to the officer. I learned that there were a number of steps of negotiation that ensued, a little dance that you would engage in. Usually it began by the officer emphasizing that the crime was very serious, even including going to jail for a few days. Then you would protest and say you didn't know the law, and then the conversation would move to resolving the issue quickly by paying a fine at the police station. Now the driver needed to say, it was very inconvenient to go to the police station right now. So could I give the money to you, sir? Which by now has been negotiated down to about $20 Canadian. And will you see to it that it gets to the right place? Of course. He would be happy to do that, he responded. In one case, when this happened to us, the officer stuck the money under his green hat and cheerfully went back to the intersection to flag down other drivers. I'm not sure if you would say this officer had authority, but he had power. Now, on one occasion, a good friend of ours was stopped by a young officer who refused to go through the usual dance. No, señor, no puedo recibir dinero directamente de usted. Es ilegal. No, I can't take money directly from you. It's illegal, he declared. You must come to the police station with me and pay it there. So off they went to the police station a few blocks away, he on his heavy clunker of a bicycle, and our friend in his fancy Jeep ahead of him. When they got to the police station, all tuckered out and sweaty, he proudly presented his catch to the sergeant. The sergeant proceeded to ask to see our friend's driver's license. But when he saw that our friend had a diplomat's driver's license and was the director of Canada Save the Children, the mood changed. He recognized him to be a person of authority, as he was. He addressed him respectfully. He asked him what kind of work his agency did in Bolivia. He commended him for the good work that his agency was doing in his country, and he politely gave back the driver's license. Then he turned on the poor, huffing and puffing young, honest patrolman, and he raked him over the coals for bothering this noble foreigner. He ordered the officer to get back to his post and let this fine Canadian go about his good work. The poor young fellow had not seen it coming. He had not yet learned how the authority lines were drawn in this policing business. Authority recognizes authority. Well, back to our Bible story. Jesus has established himself as one who has authority, moral authority to heal, to forgive sins, to call disciples, to teach about God's way. He enters Capernaum up on the northern side of the Sea of Galilee, and a Roman Gentile centurion, perhaps in service to Pontius Pilate or Herod Antipas, with a deathly ill slave, has heard about him. The centurion is a surprising fellow. For one, contrary to the norm, he values his slave like his own son. Furthermore, this Roman is friends with the Jewish elders. Remember, the story is being written after the Romans have sacked Jerusalem and burned the temple. But this centurion has friends among the Jewish elders. Aware of the social barrier between himself and this Jewish holy man, Jesus, the centurion sends these Jewish elders to ask for help. They speak to Jesus earnestly on his behalf. They say, he is worthy of having you do this for him, for he loves our people, and it is he who built our synagogue for us. Seems that the centurion is a believer, a God-fearer, a Gentile God-fearer. What's interesting also is that the Jewish elders recognize the authority of Jesus the healer. They also recognize his authority. And they're willing to mediate between Jesus and the Roman Gentile. Do the Jewish elders fear that Jesus would think it improper to help a Gentile? That's an interesting twist. Jesus agrees, and he sets out to the home of the centurion. And now a second exchange happens not far from his home. This man of Roman authority, who the Jewish elders said is very worthy, declares himself to be unworthy. Unworthy to receive Jesus. He will spare Jesus the defilement of entering a Gentile home. Jesus need only say the word. As a man of authority, he knows the power of a word. Someone told me a few weeks ago that in the midst of childhood family chaos, his father needed to say only a word and the children would become quiet and listen. The centurion's yes and his no, his go and his come, his do this and don't do that, shape the lives of those around him. He is a man of authority. But in this honor-shame society, he humbles himself to accept the word of the one of one he recognizes as having more authority than he does, a Jewish holy man. So to begin with, on the surface, this story is about the authority of Jesus. The Roman centurion, a man recognized for his authority, acknowledges Jesus as having a higher authority than his. The authority of Jesus is recognized beyond his own hometown and people, as Jesus has already predicted in his sermon to the Nazareth crowd when he began his ministry. Jesus has authority to speak and act on behalf of God, and even a Roman centurion acknowledges it. That's the first teaching. The second teaching relates to the fact that this Roman centurion is commended by Jesus as having more trust than anyone in Israel. This in the presence of the Jewish elders, one can assume. Here, let me briefly refer to our first lectionary reading, the reading from 1 Kings 8. The few verses we read are taken from a lengthy prayer that is placed into King Solomon's mouth at his dedication. There are some remarkable things in the prayer. Among them is the high respect paid to the foreigner who will come to Solomon's temple to pray. Solomon prays that God will listen in a special way to the foreigner, the outsider. When a foreigner who is not of your people Israel, he says, comes from a distant land because of your name, for they shall hear of your great name, your mighty hand, your outstretched arm. When a foreigner comes and prays toward this house, then hear in heaven your dwelling place and do according to all that the foreigner calls you to do, so that all the peoples of the earth may know your name and fear you. The prayer of the foreigner is to receive a special audience before God. In Luke's gospel, a foreigner brings his need to Jesus. Luke's gospel includes a number of stories similar to this one in which an individual comes to Jesus with a need. In each of these so-called quest stories, the needy person faces a significant barrier, which in the eyes of some should prevent him or her from sharing in God's salvation. The paralytic, for example, carried by his friends, is immobile. The woman who anoints the feet of Jesus is a reputed sinner. The leper is a Samaritan. Zacchaeus is a tax collector. And the centurion is a Roman Gentile. In each of these stories, except for one, the rich ruler who leaves saddened because he cannot let go of his riches, all of the others receive what they request from Jesus. Jesus reaches out to include the outcast. In the case of the centurion, after the trust of the centurion is commended, those who had been sent by the centurion return home, and they find the slave is in good health. Jesus finds trust where one would not expect to find it, in a Gentile soldier. Even soldiers in the service of oppressive Rome and its client rulers may share in the healing salvation offered by Jesus. When the Gentile mission begins, the Apostle Peter will encounter another Roman centurion, Cornelius, and the social barriers will come down even further. None of these gospel quest stories go on to give us details about what it meant for these individuals to receive healing and salvation. What difference did it make in their lives? Was it possible for the Roman centurion to declare his unworthiness and to trust the word of Jesus and yet continue to serve an emperor who proclaimed himself to be Lord and demanded absolute obedience and worship? What do you think happened to the centurion? Surely there was a cost for him to pay. Was it possible to have slaves when accepting the authority of Jesus? Those are questions left unanswered in the story, but with which these early believers certainly struggled. What is plain is that there is no barrier too great for God's word of salvation to transcend. No outsider too distant to be included. No life situation beyond the reach of God's mercy. That's the good news of the gospel. Later, Peter summarizes this conviction when he says, "I truly understand that God shows no partiality, but in every nation, anyone who fears him and does what is right is acceptable to him." We should perhaps be prepared to have Jesus commend the faith of someone we judge to be on the outside. The way that the centurion receives the mercy of God through Jesus is consistent with the way others, like the disciple Peter, came to Jesus through the confession of sin or unworthiness and trust in the authority of Jesus as one who brings us to God. It continues to be a model for us, setting aside our arrogance and self-inflation, acknowledging our unworthiness in God's presence, and then accepting the authority of Jesus in our lives. Jesus brings us to God and shows us God's way. What does it mean for you and me to recognize the authority of Jesus in our lives? That's the question the gospel reading leaves with us. May we serve you as you intend, and amid the cares that claim us, hold in mind eternity.